This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
These are being perpetrated by a number of different Islamist armed groups that are allied to both Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb as well as the Islamic State affiliate in Burkina Faso.
That's Corinne Dufka of Human Rights Watch on the rise of Islamist attacks in Burkina Faso. Details coming up also. Al-Shabaab militant group stormed a military base that hosts U.S. and Kenyan counter-terrorism forces, killing three U.S. personnel. And Ugandan presidential hopeful Robert Chagulani, also known as musician Bobby Wine, has been arrested. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Human Rights Watch has detailed some of the horrific acts by Islamist groups in Burkina Faso in recent months. The attacks coincide with a rise in violence in the Sahel region, with coordinated attacks against military outposts, towns, and small villages. HRW spokeswoman Corinne Dufka explains the situation to my colleague Paul Alexander.
We documented a very dramatic and disturbing surge in atrocities against civilians, including assassinations and indiscriminate attacks. I documented 20 incidents which occurred between April and December 2019. These are being perpetrated by a number of different Islamist armed groups that are allied to both Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb as well as the Islamic State affiliate in Burkina Faso.
So how much is this related to what else is going on in the other Sahel nations?
Well, the violence has occurred within the context of a dramatic increase in violence and insecurity throughout the Sahel, that is Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. There have been numerous audacious, bold attacks against the security forces in those three countries, as well as hundreds of civilians killed in 2019 by ethnically allied militias and by jihadist groups. So there really is a severe deterioration happening, and this violence is occurring within that context.
So how is this violence impacting relations between the various ethnic groups in the region?
Well, that's a very important question because those relations are really taking a hit. Now, there are a few interesting dynamics which underscore this increase in violence, and one of them is the ethnic dynamic. The Islamists have very strategically targeted the ethnic pull or Fulani for their recruitment. And the army has engaged in often collective punishment against that community. So that has driven many young men to join the jihadist forces. And then the jihadists have largely attacked the agrarian communities, that is the Mossi, the Songwe, the Fulse, the Gormache in Burkina Faso. And indeed, the vast majority of victims of the attacks which we documented were people from those ethnic groups. So ethnic relations are very tense at the moment, and there is collective punishment really going both sides.
What can the Burkina Faso government do to stop this violence, and why haven't they been able to provide better security so far?
Many of the attacks are occurring in small villages and hamlets, on processions, on humanitarian convoys. And sometimes they even have provided military escort. For example, the very deadly attack on the Samafo mine, which occurred in November, had a military escort, and they were still not able to stop these attacks against against civilians. They are, in many ways, trying to increase their deployment to protect the populations. And the Islamists have attacked so many people that are engaged in farming that it's provoked the movement, the displacement of tens of thousands of people who have rushed into the larger cities. So they feel protected there. But, of course, they can always do more to protect the civilians population, but also we have called on the army to ensure that the security force operations, which have been driving people into the hands of the jihadists, respect national and international law, because we believe that that could at least help diminish some of the ethnic tension and some of the violence. But more than anything, these are really war crimes. I documented horrific attacks in which the jihadists surrounded villages and churches, and in one case, a mosque, and then either picked out particular people to execute or just executed people at random. Other attacks, like the one that occurred just a few weeks ago on the 24th of December, in which they attacked a gendarme post, but also went into a neighborhood in which there were tens of thousands of refugees and just opened up a fire, killing over 30 women.
That was Human Rights Watch spokeswoman Corinne Dufka speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. In Lamu County, the coastal region of Kenya, some civilians are moving out of their homes into small towns for safety. The development comes a day after the Al-Shabaab militant group stormed a military base that hosts U.S. and Kenyan counter-terrorism forces, killing 3 U.S. personnel. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Witnesses say people are moving out of villages near the Manda Bay airfield for fear of further attacks or getting caught in clashes between security forces and Al-Shabaab fighters hiding in the nearby Boni Forest. Anab Haji is a member of the County Assembly of Lamu. Her constituency falls under the area that came under attack.
Yeah, people are in fear, actually. And people have been moving from their village to the nearby town, that is Hindi and Mokoe. They're moving from their village. You know, we have villages like places like Mkondoni, you have Sinambio, Kausara. So people have been here. That's why they are leaving, going to town. Yeah, they are afraid, yeah. But security is very tight. The militaries are doing a very good job.
On Sunday, Al-Shabaab militants stormed the base, damaging several aircraft and vehicles before they were driven out by the American and Kenyan forces. The U.S. Africa Command, in a statement, said the 3 men killed were an American serviceman and 2 contractors. 2 more contractors were wounded, and they were in a stable condition. One man who lived close to the camp moved to Hindytown, which is about 5 kilometers from the base, for safety.
If
people can attack such a military camp, that of powerful country, what about ordinary people like us who just walk with nothing? He says, there are security officers present, but these people know officers are there and they are still coming. So you can't know. You don't want to take risk, want to be caught between the officers and militiamen. Since the attack Sunday morning, Kenya has beefed up security in and around Lamu County, which borders Somalia. Security analyst Abdullahi Halake told VOA that Al-Shabaab is trying to exploit political developments in the Horn of Africa, including the upcoming Somalia election.
There's no good relationship between Mogadishu and Nairobi. And Al-Shabaab is now taking advantage of all that. The election is this year. Kenya and Somalia do not enjoy a good relationship. AMISOM winding down, if everything goes as planned, this year. So all these things are brought together, and Al-Shabaab is taking advantage of that. And my sense is we might be able to see some of these attacks probably increasing.
Al-Shabaab has carried out frequent terror attacks in Kenya since 2011, when Kenya sent soldiers to Somalia to fight Al-Shabaab. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Ugandan presidential hopeful Robert Chagulani, also known as musician Bobby Wine, has been arrested while heading to his first consultation meeting on his 2021 presidential bid. Police accuse Wine of breaching the Public Order Management Act and police guidelines regarding the venue for consultation. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Bobby Wine was scheduled to launch his nationwide consultations on his presidential ambitions this morning after getting a go-ahead from the Electoral Commission last week. However, police cordoned off the playground where Wine was to hold his meeting in Gayaza, a few kilometers from his home in Magere.
This is an open ground. No. An open ground is not acceptable. Because an open ground comes like as if you are making a rally, and this is not acceptable. So please, let us put there, and then
our plan was putting an enclosed tent. This is an open ground. My friend, we are looking for a better place.
Wine's supporters were later whisked away by police.
We are very sad because we asked for permission. We just surprised, we see a policeman come and take over our tools. So we are not happy about everything. We are just waiting our command from our president. We are just calling upon all people to come and join us here. For us, we are here, we're not leaving because we got a permission from Electoral Commission. These people, they are fearing us whenever we go, they're just surrounding us. Down.
Police maintained that Wine failed to observe sections of the Public Order Management Act, POMA, which govern public meetings. Edson Mohanji is the district police commander for Kasangati.
If these people were to hold a meeting here, they should have come and we could meet with them to make a traffic plan, to make a risk assessment. They should have also requested for security of their participants, which they have not done. Ensure there is adequate provision of emergency response capabilities like ambulances for evacuation, fire and rescue services, and on-spot first aid. We have not planned with them, and they are expecting 2,000 people. Without these facilities, some people can die from here. As police, we are mandated to protect life and property. Therefore, that's the reason why we are not going to allow them.
Police intercepted Wine as he proceeded to the venue with his supporters and lawyers and took them to the Kasangati police post, where they were detained briefly and later transferred to Nagalama police station. Nicholas Opiyo is a Ugandan lawyer. He says Wine didn't breach any law. He has, however, warned of more such arrests as the 2021 elections draw closer, with President Yoweri Museveni expected to seek re-election again.
The actions of the Ugandan police force are actions that point to what we must expect in the next coming election, that everything will be done to cripple anybody who will oppose Museveni or who offers credible challenges to President Museveni. Bobi Wine committed no offense, and I don't even think he will be charged in any court of law. He will be released at nightfall, as expected. This kind of actions paint Uganda in very bad light.
With the number of Ugandans, especially young people, embracing Wine's people power movement, the legislator has been viewed as a big threat to Museveni and his government. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says he has begun a gradual deployment of troops to bolster the UN-backed government of national unity in Libya's capital. Erdogan said yesterday the military units will be focused on ensuring a ceasefire, not to fight. Led by a lieutenant general, Erdogan said they are being tasked with coordination at a command center. Turkey's parliament authorized the deployment of troops to Libya on Thursday after a request by the Tripoli government. Forces loyal to Commander General Khalifa Haftar launched an assault on Tripoli last April. The conflict has since bogged down to a near stalemate. On Saturday, at least 30 people were killed and 33 others wounded in an attack on a military academy in the Libyan capital. Refugee rights organizations in South Africa have criticized the Department of Home Affairs for introducing tough new regulations that will have far-reaching effects on refugees and asylum seekers. The regulations that came into effect on the 1st of January ban refugees from engaging in political activity, impose immediate detention on grounds of national security, demand that asylum seekers obtain an asylum transit visa at the port of entry before entering the country, and also prohibit refugees from seeking services of their embassies or consulates. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Refugees and migrant rights groups have described the regulations as oppressive and undemocratic. They require those intending to seek asylum in South Africa to declare their intention at the port of entry. The immigration officer will issue an asylum transit visa, which they are required to present at a refugee reception center when they apply for asylum. All children and spouses must be declared on the first application to avoid rejection at a later stage. Those claiming to be married will undertake intensive separate interviews to prove the existence of such a marriage, even if they have a marriage certificate. Ngabuto Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, says the new regulations are disappointing.
This has come as a shock to us, because we never knew about any public hearings that were conducted on this matter. So we are consulting our lawyers to understand the implications of this from a legal point of view and map the way forward.
The regulations also allow officials to set limitations on which sectors of the economy an asylum seeker can seek employment and education institutions that can allow them to study. Those suspected to be posing a threat to national security will be immediately detained and arrested. The asylum seeker and refugee permits will be given with a long list of do's and don'ts attached. It prohibits the holder from participating in political activities of their country of origin and South Africa. Vusumuzi Smanda is the chairman of the African Diaspora Forum.
They are not really pro, you know, development and pro human rights. You cannot take away, you know, people's rights to political life, because human beings, I mean, are political animals. And I think that the court is just going to throw, you know, that particular provision, you know, away. And I'm not sure what is the mischief behind that, because it is just one of those things that is not sustainable.
They are also not allowed to seek any kind of documents or help from their embassies or consulates in South Africa. The end of last year saw dozens of refugees and asylum seekers in South Africa protesting and demanding to be relocated to other countries. They accused South Africa of being xenophobic. The protests follow a wave of xenophobic violence that left 12 people dead. The Department of Home Affairs has always insisted that the new regulations will improve the refugee management system and prevent abuses by those who see it as an easier opportunity to get permission to reside in South Africa. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's grinding economy challenges are seriously hampering public services in the second largest city of Bulawayo. Adigando gives us more on the story.
The Bulawayo City Council last week announced it was suspending some critical public services, including ambulances, citing a number of reasons. Council says it's unable to meet its obligations due to the general shortage of fuel in the market, cash flow challenges, and the inability of council to generate foreign currency, which is required by most fuel suppliers. The city spokesperson detailed the monthly fuel demands.
The city of Bulawayo requires at least 70,000 liters of diesel and 40 liters of petrol on a monthly basis to provide efficient services to the residents.
The council says the fuel shortages also have affected repairs to sewer and water faults in most parts of the city. Last month, the local authority was forced to suspend refuse collection services in the western suburbs, citing failure to source enough fuel on the open market. The local authority says ambulance services will only be responding to critical emergencies such as traffic accidents, undiagnosed incidences at public places, and home maternity cases referred from municipal clinics. However, there reportedly have been several cases where distress calls have led to delays in ambulances arriving, or they have not showed up at all, leading to fatalities. Onias Bebe, a local resident, vented his frustration at the city council.
I feel so embarrassed about these ambulance issues because some of our youth, they even died.
Last week, a young woman died following an abortive attempt to jump the perimeter fence at a concert venue. Despite frantic calls to the city's ambulance service, there was a delay which some observers say may have contributed to her death. Council maintains that though it is under financial distress, it has continued to render much-needed services.
There are no instances where the city of Flower has suspended services in totality.
The council is advising residents to seek alternative means of transport for emergencies until the situation improves. Zimbabwe is reeling under serious economic challenges, including fuel shortages that result in long queues. Critics say no hope is in sight unless the political arrangements in the country improves and positively affects the economy. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
As Zimbabweans struggle with soaring inflation, they now confront significantly higher prices at public health care facilities. Reporter Kuzaiza Nwashi has more from Harare.
Dr. Norman Matara is with the Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights. He says there was some justification for the new prices.
There are two issues here involved. The price increases, they were long overdue. That is the first thing. The money that was being charged, they were a little bit low compared to the prices of acquiring some of the goods and services to use.
The increases vary based on the service, but on average, they are over 500%. Matara does have some reservations.
At the same time, we have to look at it with the people's earnings now, because when we talk about the right to health, we are talking about the issue of accessibility and availability. The issue of accessibility now also includes affordability. In as much as the prices are justified, but people will not be able to afford them when we look at how much people are earning.
Matara fears the result will be fewer people can access healthcare. Dr. Agnes Mahomva is the permanent secretary in the Ministry of Health. She told the state broadcaster the government will continue its policy of providing free care for the vulnerable.
I want to assure the public out there that as a Minister of Health and Child Care, we have not abandoned our policies. Specifically, we intend to make sure that the under fives remain free. We are not charging them. We are also taking care of the pregnant women. We also look at the elderly, 65 and above. So quite clearly, our policy has not changed. We continue looking out for the underprivileged, as I have just outlined.
Mahomva also says public institutions will not turn away anyone who does not fall in those categories, but cannot afford medical fees. The price increases come after some junior doctors returned to work after a long standoff with the government because of low salaries. Matara, however, says while the higher fee hikes probably will not translate to better pay for doctors, but they may translate to better equipment and supplies in hospitals. For VOA, this is Kudzaiza Nwashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
This is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.